This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! Boom, cats.
We're live. It is the B-Live, the Orange Bloods B-Live post-game show, as we do every single Saturday. Anwar Richardson, Jeff Ketchum. Anwar live in Lubbock. I am in my friendly confines in Cedar Park after Texas pulls out what turned into a thrilling 41-34 win on a last-second touchdown pass from Sam Ehlinger to little Jordan Humphrey. It's a game with a lot of really interesting things, Anwar, for us to talk about, the least of which isn't the fact that the Texas defense gave up a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter to a backup quarterback who couldn't stop turning the ball over at various points of the first three quarters of this game. But this is the night where Sam Ehlinger and little Jordan Humphrey just did the damn thing. It is the signature moment of this game will be little Jordan Humphrey's Michael Crabtree-ish game-winning touchdown reception. Not exactly the same as Michael Crabtree's, but pretty damn close. Sam Ehlinger has the best game of his career, which I think tops last week's game, which was the best game of his career. Little Jordan Humphrey has the best game of his career on a night when Colin Johnson wasn't able to play. And I just remember thinking going into the game, look, if I'm Texas Tech, Devin Duvernay can beat me. Freshman receivers can beat me. Malcolm Epps, Jerod Hurd, they can all beat me. But on a night when Colin Johnson isn't playing, I'm not going to let little Jordan Humphrey beat me. And Texas Tech was like, no, dog, we're going to put single man coverage on their best player, and we're just going to live with whatever happens. And what happened was that I felt like Sam Ehlinger and little Jordan Humphrey ate cornbread all night long. They ate all of Texas Tech's cornbread, and they're the difference between an important win and potentially a humiliating loss. I mean, they lose that game. They're 6-4 going into next week's game, trying to stave off 6-5. And instead, they're playing a really important game next week. And as I said, Anwar, it's all about Sam. It's all about little Jordan Humphrey. This was for them their like quintessential signature performance, and it was very much needed.
Yeah, and it's very ironic, Ketch, because this is a game last year where you needed Sam to make a play down the stretch, and that's when he throws the interception. And a year later, when we can really talk about his growth and where he is, you needed Sam to make a play down the stretch, and he throws a touchdown pass. In a beautifully placed touchdown ball. And you know, the thing I'm writing for Sunday, I haven't even had a chance to see what you've written. But you know, it's to me, it's about Sam. It's a Sam Ehlinger show, his growth, his development, having, you know, I'll borrow one of my NFL terms, a franchise guy at that position. You've written about it ad nauseum for years about the lack of having a franchise guy. And this is what they have right now. Yes, Damian, I am wearing glasses. I do wear them every once in a while. But them having a franchise guy that they can lean on when they've blown, and it's not his fault, but blown a 17-point lead, and you're thinking, uh-oh, where's this thing headed? Uh-oh, what's going to happen? And Sam Ehlinger just goes ahead and gets a couple of runs, couple of completions, and then just puts a ball up. And for it to little Jordan Humphrey and Ketch, I know we like Coach Cool, like, you know, but dude, you're not going to do anything with little Jordan Humphrey. You're just content to say, well, I mean, like, what are these DBs doing in practice that made him think that eventually things would just come together and things would just slow down? Like, that's what I want to know. But little Jordan, and again, we could probably talk about him for a while. I don't know if he goes pro after this year, But man, he's making a case where, you know, he's one of the better receivers in the Big 12. He might make a better pro receiver than he is a college receiver. And like you said, they save catch not only a potentially embarrassing game, they may have saved the season when you really think about it, because this loss coupled with, you know, Iowa State next week, I mean, that they may have saved the season.
Absolutely. Look, it was 2 weeks ago, 15 days ago, they were in the discussion for, you know, in the rankings, in the discussion for, you know, a playoff discussion for a little bit, for 2 weeks. Back-to-back losses, this would have been a third straight loss. It is, it's interesting about Sam because he's the story, right?
Yes.
It was last year. He goes against Kansas State and Oklahoma in back-to-back games. And it was my contention coming out of that Oklahoma game that those two performances, the game against Kansas State where he was Big 12 Player of the Week, and then the next week against Oklahoma when you know, he loses the duel to a guy that's playing in the NFL right now and is pretty good in doing so. And I thought those are the best two quarterback performances by a Texas quarterback since 2008, 9 years. And we thought after that, those two performances that maybe Ellinger, even as a true freshman, had, I don't know, cleared a bar of sorts, right? Like, wow, that's what this threshold of back-to-back performances. And then, you know, for the rest of the season, we never saw that again. And then even going into this year, Sam has been a little up and down, a little bit roller coaster-ish. You think about how he started against Maryland. He hasn't really been that good on the road in general. Misses the Baylor game for all intents and purposes. I don't know that he was at his best against Oklahoma State, even though you know, I thought he was one of the better players on the field that night for Texas. But these last two performances against West Virginia and now today against Texas Tech, they're better. They're better than what he did against Kansas State and Oklahoma. So here we are again. It's been a little more than a year, but I will say this again. These two last performances back-to-back are the best two quarterback games that we've seen by a Texas quarterback since Heisman runner-up Colt McCoy was in his absolute heyday back in 2008. And look, if Texas is going to get this from Sam Ellinger for the next 2 weeks, they're going to finish 9-3, and then it's going to come down to what happens in Morgantown between Oklahoma and West Virginia. And if West Virginia beats Oklahoma, West Virginia and Texas will have a rematch in the Big 12 championship game. If, you know, I just think that's where we're at. It's as simple as when you have a quarterback that posts a 180 quarterback rating, you're probably going to win most games. And it's weird that Texas almost lost a game on a night when Sam Ellinger probably was as good tonight as he's ever been. And little Jordan Humphrey was certainly better than he's ever been before. It says a lot about where this team is on both sides of the ball. That should have been a comfortable win. And that it wasn't, you don't spoil the night and focus on the negative, but it's a reminder that this is still just a pretty good team. It's not better than that. A team that's better than pretty good puts their foot on Texas Tech's throat when they're up 34-17. And it never gets to the ending. And that it did is just a reminder that this team lives week to week, man. Like when we talk about the Iowa State game next week and we talk about the quarterback play that they suddenly have, you know, like, Texas is winning games in spite of its defense, which is a real shame to have to say that tonight, because it looked like for a while we were going to be able to get out of this game and say Todd Orlando's unit had a bit of a bounce back game. They gave up that first points in the opening drive and then really shut Texas Tech down for most of the first half. They shut them down for most of the third quarter. And then all hell breaks loose in the fourth quarter and late in the second half. And that's a little bit like the Texas defense on WAR giving up points on 8 out of 10 drives to start games this season. the Texas's inability, like Texas won the game, so it finished, right? Like to the victor go the spoils. But this was a 34-17 game with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and they did it again. They did that thing that they did against Oklahoma, that they did against West Virginia to a certain extent. Like, this is still not a 60-minute football team, and that may be the final thing that we write on this tombstone. If they come up just short of the Big 12 championship goal and getting to that game, I think we'll look back and say they couldn't go 60 minutes enough times this season. And that's why they'll finish 9-3 or 8-4 or whatever their final record is. But it's a complicated game to talk about. So many injuries, but so many really good performances, not just Lil Jordan and Sam, but Jerod Hurd had a game, right? Yet they don't win that game without Jerod Hurd, Jared, or what is Devin Duvernay had another big night when he had a very quiet first half, but then he has a big second half. About PJ Locke, everybody's going to remember the onside missile that hit him off the chest and was recovered. And I don't really blame PJ Locke for that, because that thing was shot out of a jugs machine, basically. And I don't know how many guys are catching that ball. I don't know what you do in that situation except try to catch the ball. And I don't know how many guys are catching that ball. But I thought PJ Locke had his best game of the year. I thought Caden Stearns, before he nearly got knocked unconscious, was having one of his best games of the year. I thought Charles Amenihu played really well. I thought Jeffrey McCulloch played pretty well tonight. I thought he was more active tonight. And that 3-3-5 that they went to for a lot of the game, instead of that six defensive back look that they was getting roasted a week ago, I thought there were a lot of really good things in this game. I can't believe it was 34-34 with a minute to go.
It's crazy how that happened. And it is what's crazy, because I mean, I think you and I would probably agree that for the majority of this game, Jet Duffy was pretty damn horrible. I mean, I don't know how he was a state player of the year. I'm still trying to figure this out.
He turned it over three times inside the Texas 20-yard line. Three times.
Like, he killed so many drives. It's amazing, because Cliff Kingsbury usually doesn't have quarterbacks like that. But you know, Jet Duffy, to a certain degree, because he's young, kind of reminds me a little bit of what Sam was, not to that major turnover degree, but it's almost like you see what a young person looks like as opposed to what an experienced quarterback looks like, at least a better one. But it is amazing. You know, we've kind of talked about this a little bit before, Ketch, with the elephant in the room, which clearly it's out now that the defense is just not that good. Now, it's interesting because after the game, Tom Herman said he was proud of the defensive performance, and he was proud of how these guys were able to step up and get a stop at the end, and you know, when it counted. And you know, I'm sure at this point it is what it is. I mean, what can he do? I mean, this is the week 10. So, I mean, there's not much else left to say other than you're just hoping for the best. You're hoping to get these stops when you can, but knowing that you have an offense that's good enough, like you said, you know, the offense did its job against West Virginia. It was just the defense that just gave it up late. You know, they scored. They put their team on top. The offense didn't try to do enough against Oklahoma State. It was a defensive problem. And tonight it was one of those up 17, you know, Ketch, I'm already thinking about what I'm going to write in the morning. I've already got a ton of notes, and you know, you're in a cruise control. And literally I was like, you know, when you see Texas Tech kick the field goal, and now it's 14 points, you're still thinking, that's insurmountable. No way. and so it's funny. I start to head down. You know, I'm going to go down on the field. There's only one elevator up here. So I'm like, let me just beat the crowd. And all I know is I'm about to get in the elevator, and I hear the screams from the crowd, and I'm just thinking, oh shit, here we go. And then sure enough, you know, see it's an onside kick. And then, you know, they score, and then they score again. They're just like, here we go, here we go, here we go. It's got to be frustrating for Orlando. It's got to be frustrating defense. And look, there will be a certain thing where you'll have to say, okay, they did have some legit injuries. Tom Herman did point out that there were legit injuries. The Devontae Davis catch probably quietly is having a really, really good season at cornerback.
Best game of his career tonight. Probably.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this guy, you know, gets, you know, causes a fumble, recovers it, gets an interception. I mean, we've seen that. Like, I think Devontae Davis quietly has had a very, very good season. He doesn't get much attention. Because Chris Boyd seems to want the attention and command attention, which could be a good thing, and it could be a bad thing. It's good when it's going well. It's bad when guys are looking for you specifically, like the ocean, and trying to throw it towards your way. But, you know, at the end of the day, Ketch, I just want to ask you a question. We're talking about the Big 12, and we're talking about the Big 12 championship, and we can start playing a little scenarios of what needs to happen. If this team finishes 9-3, though, Ketch, it does not go to the Big 12 championship, would you still view it as a successful season?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a 3-game improvement off of the regular season from a year ago. It includes a win against Oklahoma. It includes a win against TCU. It includes a win against USC and Texas Tech. I mean, they went on the road at Kansas State, which hasn't been done in like a million years. So, yes, 9-3. What tonight did was it stopped the bleeding, right? I mean, this was a team on a 2-game losing streak, and I don't know what to think of the Iowa State game next week. Iowa State suddenly dealing with suspensions. David Montgomery's going to miss the first half. They got an offensive lineman. Did you see the fights in that Iowa State-Baylor game?
No, but I kept hearing about it. I heard Cade Brewer. What's their quarterback thing? Charlie Brewer got ejected also?
Yeah, that was way later.
Okay.
Like he got ejected for arguing a call, and I think it was his second unsportsmanlike conduct penalty because everybody on both teams got an unsportsmanlike. I mean, it was a football brawl. This dude from Baylor jumped over an official's shoulder to throw a haymaker to a guy's head.
Yeah, wow.
There were dudes that were suspended from the game, right, and technically they have to miss the first half of next week. That stuff was so bad that I wonder if there won't be guys that just get suspended for more games. I don't know. Nathan says, funny how many of the Tech fans are playing the if Bowman had played card. I mean, Nathan, Texas fans still play. I say it all the time. If Colt McCoy doesn't get hurt in the championship game in January of 2010, I think they beat Alabama. You know, the what-if games. That's what losers do. That's what the losing side does. Texas was 34th. Texas Tech ran up 600 offense. Or wait, was it 594? Almost 600 yards of total offense against an inexperienced, baby-faced backup quarterback who allegedly couldn't throw the ball very well. His quarterback ranking coming into this game was awful. And at one point tonight, he was 18 of 22. Like, if Jet Duffy could have just kept from stepping on his own feet tonight, Texas Tech might win this game tonight. Look, the entire game changed with that Devontae Davis interception. They are a yard or two away from being up 14-0 in the first quarter, and that stadium would have been ready. It would have made what Texas needed to do from that moment on really difficult, I think. And they didn't pull it off. And suddenly 14-0 turned into 7-0, turned into 7-3. And suddenly the game just got manageable again, as opposed to having to chase it. I thought Texas – I thought Jet Duffy and his – just – your that comparison to Ellinger was actually really good on war. I was thinking of that, too, at one point during the game. It just looked like he was trying too hard. And I thought about moments last year when Sam tried too hard. And the composure between the two players was probably the difference in this game. In a game that Texas wins by 7, Sam had all of the composure, and the difference meant 7 points. That was the difference between the two teams for all of Sam's composure, 7 points. I think that's a worrisome thing. I think that Tom talked about the defense right out of the gate is his attempt to cut off that conversation at the pass. I think anticipating that he was just about to get asked a lot about a defense that again gave up a 2-score lead in the fourth quarter, nearly 600 yards. I think his first comments were about the defense and how proud he was. Cause he's just trying to survive this season now with all of the injuries they have.
Yes.
Brecken Hager's putting duct tape on his arm to get through games. Marquez Bimage is out. You start thinking about Devontae Davis had to leave the game, and Caden Stearns had to leave the game, and Brandon Jones didn't play in the game. And this was a banged up defense.
Like the other Duvernay was playing in the fourth quarter.
So it was Chris Brown. There were a lot of names on the field.
You were like, who? Like, this is when I had to go to the roster a couple of times, I was like, who's that? And it's not to say you're ignorant of guys, but just sometimes you just forget guys exist.
You know what's really interesting about tonight? And look, tell me if I'm wrong, because I might be. I've been wrong several times today. Chris Boyd, usually the way Texas uses its cornerbacks, they have Boyd for the majority of Boyd's season. They've had him kind of hold down one side of the field, and Devontae Davis holds down the other side of the field. And they haven't flipped them a lot this season. They kind of stay in their own lanes and on their own sides of the field. And it's been interesting because we've seen games this season where teams have picked on Boyd and said, that's going to be our guy, right? And then there have been a couple of other games where we've seen them go after Devontae Davis, and Boyd hasn't been thrown at very much. And you go, well, they were afraid of Chris Boyd because they were going to their guy or whatever the case may be. I thought what was interesting tonight was it looked like they moved Boyd all over the field to match up man-to-man with Antoine Wesley, the Texas Tech wide receiver. Because if you think about where the big touchdown that really got that comeback started, the one that went against Boyd, Boyd was on the opposite side of the field from where he normally plays. They wanted that. Texas went into that game saying, okay, the guy we can't let beat us is Antoine Wesley. And Antoine Wesley put a baptism on. If little Jordan Humphrey ate all of Texas Tech's cornbread, Antoine Wesley got him some of Chris Boyd's cornbread. That's for sure. It was really interesting to me because we're talking, and I bring all this up because we're talking about Devontae Davis and like the game that he had. They mostly, like, he had the interception, but that was kind of a fluke play. He forces the fumble, and that was an amazingly heads up play. But, you know, for a guy that really is going to make his bones and make his cash for what he did in a dozen pass defense. And again, I thought Devontae Davis had the best game of his career. Chris Boyd didn't. And he didn't on a night when it looked like Texas said, Chris Boyd, we're going to give you as much responsibility as you can handle. And as it turns out, he couldn't handle Antoine Wesley very much.
And here's the thing. This is back-to-back weeks because he had the Seals guy last week, and that guy went after him. And really, I mean, hell, you go back to Oklahoma State. I mean, teams are going after him. And, they'll tell you, like, hey, the guy's all alone. It's on an island. You know, quarterbacks have to have short memories. We know all those things. But we also know that, you know, this is a Chris Boyd who just a couple of weeks ago was going on social media to go toe-to-toe with Acho. And then had to delete it, and coach had to speak to him about those things. Like, yeah, man, like this is one of those things when you command attention and you have teams that see potential weaknesses, they're going after him. I mean, they just are. And the weird thing about Chris Boyd catch, it just seems like Look, I'm no expert. I've never played cornerback, but it just my observations are when he goes up to jump for a ball, he really seems to mistime it. Like, I don't know if he gets lost a little bit, but I mean, that one that he gave up, you know, it was, but he jumped early. And then next thing you know, it just, you know, by the time he comes down, the guy catches the ball. You know, Chris Boyd overall, they get the win. So he lives to survive another day. But yeah, these teams are definitely going after him. And he's just not Holton Hill. I mean, he's not Holton Hill.
I think Texas Tech probably wins tonight if they have their healthy quarterback. Now they didn't, and Texas gets the win. And that's the only thing that matters is what actually happens. I think tonight was a really good, there was some really nice fortune that fell Texas's way on a night when they were missing a bunch of guys. And I'm sure, you know, Tom Herman would say, well, look, if we had Colin Johnson and Brandon Jones and all of our guys, it would have been different. Maybe. This Texas defense is bad, though. It is. And, you know, they gave up 34, but they only gave up 34 because Texas Tech had its backup quarterback turning the ball over like it was a hot potato every time he got inside the 20. You know, I don't know what to think about this team going into the Iowa State game next week, because we've seen kind of quintessential Big 12 games the last couple of weeks. Oklahoma, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Texas. Like, this is Big 12 football, right? Like, this is what you expect, these 41-34 type shootouts. I don't think we get that next week. Like, Iowa State can play defense, and Iowa State can rush the passer, and Iowa State has a good quarterback. I think Iowa State's won, you know, 4 or 5 games in a row now, maybe 5. It is, it's a team that is playing really good football right now. And I think next week's a fourth quarter game, but I think it plays 20 points lower. I think the winning team finishes with 27, 28 points. And I don't know that we see the high wire act that we've seen before, but I don't know that Texas is better than Iowa State. And if you look at their numbers, the quarterback play is actually pretty even. I mean, Purdy has been putting up Sam Ellinger numbers the last 5 weeks. So next week, I saw this stat. How about this? There are 2 matchups next week in all of college football that involve ranked teams playing ranked teams. Texas versus Iowa State is one of those 2 games, live on the Longhorn Network.
Have they set a time for that? Is that late game?
That's a late game. That's a 7 o'clock game.
That's goodness gracious. We're never just gonna get out of here before midnight. No. Apparently, you know, they probably flex to Kansas to be a late game. Hopefully not. But I mean, here's the thing, Ketch. I off topic for a second, but on topic, if you're worried about this defense now, you say, you know, you have the struggles about it. What do you think about this defense next year, Ketch?
I can't have that conversation tonight. I don't know. Look, I don't know. Can they go out and add some JUCO pieces? And if they can, and it may not even be JUCO pieces, can Texas, you know, in this new age of college football, can they get some grad transfers that can rush the passer? I mean, I think one of the questions that I want to see asked of both Herman and Orlando is I guess their answer would have to be yes. Otherwise, they'd look like damn fools for answering no. But I can't help but wonder, when looking at their personnel, if they have the personnel for what they want to do on defense in a Todd Orlando defense. And I bring this up in the context of what you just asked. When they don't have Charles Omenihue and Chris Nelson and Brecken Hager is not right for this scheme. But when they're left with Marquez Bimage and Taquan Graham and a minimally effective Malcolm Roach when his hand is on the ground, and Gerald Wilbon as the only experienced defensive tackle. Like, what is your scheme? What is the right scheme when your defensive linemen are undersized and you don't have a lot of them? Because they want to be a three-man front defense. That is what Todd Orlando has made his bones as in this decade as a defensive coordinator. They don't have the personnel now to do what they want to do. When they're all healthy, when all of their guys are there, they don't have the right personnel. And I don't know what it means next year when the best players of this personnel that's not right are no longer there. I think Texas will be in a lot of high-scoring games. A lot.
Yeah. It's definitely the good part. The good portion is they will have Sam, so that will help them. But it'll be interesting to see. We'll have to see what happens with Colin Johnson and Lil Jordan Humphrey, because if those guys decide that they want to jump ship, then we got to see what this offense looks like again without those guys, you know? So it's you're probably right. Next year is probably, because then we still got to talk about the offensive line and what that looks like with missing a lot of guys.
Calvin Anderson had himself a bad day tonight.
And you know, I feel bad because Calvin's such a nice guy. He is one of the nicest people. Like, that, it's a cliche, right? Such a nice guy, but
Well, gave up two sacks. He had a bad holding call. He had a false start, which is one of the best false starts of the season, because he tried his damnedest not to lean back too much. And he was like leaning back. And then eventually he just jumped and like looked sideways, like, what the hell? Snapped the ball. Like, yes. He was the only guy on the line that wanted the ball snapped. But man, he wanted it snapped.
But yeah, he was definitely, it was definitely rough. It was a rough night for him.
Let me, I'm going to run. So this one is like in a night when Sam's great and Lil Jordan's great. They did the weird thing with the running backs again tonight. Keontae Ingram didn't. We had the same amount of first quarter touches as Keontae Ingram did tonight. Mm-hmm. And in the end, Keontae Ingram had, I think if I remember correctly, Trey Watson finished with 18 carries and rushed for 3.8 yards per carry.
3.2.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. 3.2 yards per carry on his 18 carries. And I think Keontae Ingram finished with 14, but he averaged 5.9.
Correct. but here's what's going to happen, Ketch. This is the thing. Tom Herbert will tell you running backs get banged up. So he doesn't want to overuse him. And then what happens? Keontae gets banged up. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where he can go back and say, see, this is why I'm holding off on guys, because guys get banged up and he re-injured his hip injury.
But if I didn't want to get kicked out of a press conference, this is where I would say, Tom, that's intellectually dishonest, because only the football gods jinxing Jet Duffy prevented Texas from falling down 14-0 before their best running back got a touch. That wasn't anything that Tom got right. That was, they got bailed out by, I mean, look, I'll give Devontae Davis the credit for the strip, and I'll give Chris Boyd the credit for the strip, right? Like, I will. But Jet Duffy had a ball. Like, he fumbles the snap. It goes behind him. He chases it. He runs around. And then he tries to throw the ball out of bounds, but he can't, and the ball gets intercepted. That's the only – that play is the only thing that kept Texas from being down 14-0 on the road before a running back who averages 6 yards a carry for the season got his first touch. Like tonight, it doesn't make a big deal. It's almost midnight and we're talking about these little minutia things inside of this performance, and nobody else is going to talk about this. But you know, if this game goes sideways earlier, why am I doing math? Good question, man. 'Cause it is late. And
this is like the old USA Up All Night.
Here I am like reciting yards per carry, and I couldn't even remember Colin Johnson's full health status at the beginning of the game. So maybe I do need to go to bed or stop taking Xanax or whatever the hell's going on in my world. I don't know. It was a weird game because I did look, and I nitpicked Tom on that point, the running back thing, because I've been beating that drum all season. And I'm not saying not to give Trey Watson carries. And I'm not saying that Keontae Ingram in the end didn't have a lot of carries. But part of correct game management is making sure little things like falling behind 14-0 before your best players get touches happen. And I think that's within Tom's control. And I just, you know, whatever their motives are, whether it's keep you just, that just can't happen. Now, that being said, I thought Tom did a really good job of game management tonight. I thought Cliff Kingsbury stepped on his dick 15 times in this game. And I thought, you know, Tom Herman went for it on 4th-and-4 from outside the 40. And I thought, ooh, don't know if I would do that. They converted. There was another 4th down later on in the game when I think Tom just decided we're not going to kick a field goal. I want 7.
And I thought 4th-and-1 that they hit Duvernay.
Yeah. Like, I think that, you know, whereas Tom got that stuff right, you had Cliff Kingsbury inexplicably going for it on 4th-and-1 from his own 34. Like he was Barry Switzer against the Eagles 20 something years ago. Like, I thought Texas Tech made its comeback in spite of its head coach in a lot of ways. Like I just thought Cliff Kingsbury was bad tonight, but in the end it was 34-34. And I was like, maybe he has coached a good game. Like, what the hell do I know? Because they've turned it over a bunch. They've done a bunch of boneheaded things. And yet with a minute 15, you know, and I knew Sam was going to take him down the field and get points. Like, just like you knew West Virginia was going to go down the field, not necessarily score the touchdown and get the 2-point conversion, but you knew that they were going to score because they had way too much time. 1:15 and all your timeouts with Sam Ellinger as your quarterback. Like, I never thought Texas would lose the game, I guess is what I'm saying. Even at 34. Go ahead.
What do you think about Chris Bennett's question to you?
What was worse, the Texas defense tonight or the second half of the Texas basketball game? It was, well, look, it's got it. That's a hard one, man, because they're very similar. I am going to say that the second half of the Texas basketball game against Arkansas was worse. But that the Kerwin Roach 3-pointer to send the game into overtime was pretty legit. Like, I said this yesterday. If all you did last night was turn the Texas-Arkansas game on in the final 4 minutes and you saw that and the overtime, you were like, oh, what a great college basketball game. You watched all 20 minutes of that second half, you wanted to blow your proverbial like, it's a metaphor. Like, I'm not saying I'm actually reaching for the gun, but as a sports fan, that was a grab the gun kind of moment. I never quite felt that way tonight. As bad as it was, I never thought, God, I want my 3.5 hours back. Like, I thought that last night. I was like, I want my 2 hours back. Why in the hell did I invest on a Friday night my time in this basketball game? This was just such a weird game. Texas, this has been a weird fun season. But when you're covering a greatly flawed football team like we're watching, it will be puzzling every single week because there's so much like. If you're a Texas football fan, man, put your head on the pillow tonight and just rest easy knowing that you're going to have Sam Ellinger. He comes back next season. He's your best player. He is unfortunately playing in a conference with Kyler Murray and Will Greer in it, so he's not going to make all Big 12. But he's playing at a really high level right now. And if we go back to where the conversations that we had before the season started, nothing else mattered more than getting that fixed, than getting that answer. And Texas very loudly and clearly has their answer at the quarterback position. So I think you feel really good because you win this game tonight because your quarterback was better. It matters. These things like having the best quarterback matters, and it gives you a chance to win every game. And Texas hasn't been that team either, right? I mean, they've been in every game so far this season. They really weren't in any ass kickings a year ago, but this is a team and a program that you can see the progress. It just, they have questions for the rest of this season and for next season on the other side of the ball that I don't know where the answers are. And it is fascinating to me that right in front of our very eyes in a very short amount of time, the offense and the defense in this program have flip-flop roles.
Yes. I mean, we haven't said the name Tim Beck in weeks.
I gave him a little bit of love last week, but you're right. Like,
you think about what we talked about, what our conversations were to start the season, and to think that the last time we really mentioned Tim Beck was when we said he had some sort of like bacterial infection in his elbow. It was in the hospital. And that's been our only mention. So we don't even talk about the guy. He's just a non-fact. I pointed this out on our last podcast. I posted, something from the coordinators on Wednesday. I posted a Todd Orlando one. I posted a Tim Beck one. And I don't know if anyone read the Tim Beck stuff. Like, I think people look at the offense now. They're like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Sam, he's going to put up 40 points. That's his, what the fuck is up with the defense? Like, that's what we're getting right now. It is a seismic shift, especially for a guy, Todd Orlando, that, let's just be honest, I was high on, you were high on. He was a guy that we thought, you know, maybe he does one more year here at Texas, you know, and then he's probably out. You know, he's a guy that got a pay bump, you know, to get up to 1.7. Like, He was supposed to be, in our mind, like the next one. And it's not to say that Todd Orlando is not a very, very good coach and doesn't know what he's doing. It's nothing to that effect. But there is just that genuine surprise because I remember Ketch before the season. I think at one point in one of our podcasts, it was like you had said something and it was something to the effect of, hey guys, do we need to talk about the defense at all? Because I feel like we haven't talked about the defense at all in over the last, you know, several podcasts and training camps. And I think that, you know, we're like, I mean, I guess we can. we never thought twice about it. And now we're in this thing and it's like, oh shit, this is a problem. Oh shit, what happens next year? And really it's like, oh shit, Sam, you just got to go out there and score points because this eight games, 8 out of 10, Ketch, they've given up a score on the opening possession. Like 8 out of 10 games, Sam Ehlinger starts a game in the hole.
And six or seven of those have been touchdowns.
Yes.
Seven games, the defense has given up a touchdown in the opening drive.
I mean, that's an incredible stat.
And again, the weird thing is, look, in the NFL, you can, and Chris Bennett brings it up, we haven't mentioned it, it's crazy to think that Sam owns the Big 12 record for consecutive passes without an interception, and his last interception was the one against Maryland where everybody was on tilt and ready to throw him off the boat. You know, this had been Survivor, his ass would have been off the island after a week. And it's just, if this were the NFL, you'd look at a team like Texas right now and you would say, all right, well, next year in the draft and next year in free agency, they got to shore that up, right? That's what we would say. If this were the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Sam was in the Jameis Winston role and you'd look at it and you go, okay, well, they got their quarterback and they're doing this. And like, what do they need to do to improve in the areas that are weaknesses? You do it through the draft. You can do it through free agency. In college football, you do it through recruiting. The big issue with this Texas defense is we've been talking about their failures in recruiting up front on the defensive line for a few years now. And now it's been a problem. Like, the defense has been a problem, and that front line's been a problem. Everything's been a problem to a certain extent. And Texas fans know, like, the personnel, the desired person. If look, they can lose Chris Boyd, they can lose Devontae Davis, and Texas fans are like, that's all right. We got Anthony Cook. We got Jalen Green. They can move DeShaun Jameson back. We got Caden Stearns. We got B.J. Foster. You know, we'll be okay in the secondary. You look at linebacker and you just look at that front seven in general. And it's funny because we were talking about what will the offense look like next year if Lil Jordan and Colin Johnson both leave. And I'm not nearly as worried about what a Texas offense looks like without, as crazy as that is, right? Because Lil Jordan was dominant tonight, and we've seen Colin Johnson be dominant. But Texas has recruited at the wide receiver position like they have at the DB position. So even though they're unproven, you bring back Devin Duvernay, you throw in Brennan Eagles, and you throw in Joshua Moore, and you start throwing in the guys in this freshman class, and then you know that you've got Sam Ellinger playing quarterback. So you just feel like, okay, like I do anyway, I feel like the Texas offense will be good because if you've got the quarterback, he'll find the receivers. When you look at that front seven, the thing that's really hurting this team, obvious answers for next season aren't apparent. Otherwise, and Craig's right, there's no front seven, there's a front five, and tonight it was actually a front six. I would contend, though, that this team next season needs to play a 4-3 defense, which is really like a 4-2-5. They don't have the hosses, man. Look, have you ever covered a 3-4 team in the NFL, Anwar?
I think I've seen the Packers run it at some time. At one point, I think they were heavy on that 3-4.
But you got to have monster, like.
We're talking about teams, like Clay Matthews. I mean, we're talking about like they had dudes at that point.
You have to get defensive linemen who weigh 300 plus pounds, and
yes,
like that's how that works. And
yeah, they have Pickett, I think.
Like, you know, like Brecken Hager's been playing all season at that position. That guy's not gonna play it. If you told an NFL team work with Brecken Hager as a weak side or strong side defensive end in a 3-4, they just look at you like you were an alien with three eyeballs on their forehead. Like, it just, Texas is working with a combination of players that don't fit the scheme. It's been a season-long problem. I don't know how that talent automatically gets better next season. And that's we're going to talk about it for the next 9 months. It will be the thing, because Todd Orlando's in a really weird position where Texas fans aren't happy with him at all. And I'm curious. I may have to do like a Twitter poll or an Orange Bloods poll and see what the vote looks like. I think there's more people who are against Todd Orlando now than for him. Like, I think his Q rating could be lower, but it couldn't be much lower. Like, I think that Texas fans have really lost confidence in the way he's managed the defense this year. And I just never thought those words would come out of my mouth. And it's deserved to a certain extent, because you can get lost in talking about injuries, because they've had some in the last couple of weeks, certainly tonight, but that hadn't been it. That wasn't it against Maryland. You know, Texas has struggled when they've played. Texas has been good when they've played bad quarterbacks, and they've really been bad on defense when they haven't. And, you know, so Orlando's, I think they played 10 games, and I think Orlando's defenses have been bad, and he's been outcoached in half of them.
the one thing I've since I've noticed since I've been here, Texas fans don't have the patience for or the tolerance for is hiring a guy that's supposed to be an expert at his position and then not seeing that position excel. Charlie Strong, defensive guy, that defense struggled, and that was the big beef that people had. Last year, it was Tom Herman. He's supposed to be the offensive guy. If you know what's going on, why is he not have this offense right? People were pissed off about that. Now Todd Orlando, rewarded with a big contract after 1 year, and now people are saying, what the hell is up with this defense, and why has it not shown? It hasn't shown sign of improvement. And again, if every week your week of preparation starts with you giving up a touchdown, it's incriminating. You know, it says that teams are seeing you, they're scheming you, they're seeing the weakness, and then what happened? Have a catch. Uh-oh. Looks like catch is... Don't tell me Ketch is having an internet problem. Don't tell me Ketch is having internet problems.
There you are.
All right. All right. I was
we
like,
lost you there for a second.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was okay. It was you.
Oh.
But you're back. Yeah,
you know, some people have asked some questions, Ketch. I just want to... Some people asked like about where I'm at. So I'm actually in the athletic director's... one more time. I'm in the athletic director suite.
Nice.
So people keep asking, like, what's going on with these banners and stuff. So they've got, you know, the banners here. They've got the nice hookup. They give them these nice little binoculars, spectacles, so they can look there. They've got like a...
I got to... Hey, for an athletic director suite, that thing looks like a dump.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and they got some beverages there. I don't know if there's some alcohol on the bottom one, but yeah, this is
No, man. If you're in the athletic director suite, like at Texas, they'd have some badass pictures on the wall, like big. Like, look at that. That's one step away from Charlie Strong's fat head. Did you think of the same thing as I was about to say it? Jinx. I looked at that Big 12 logo on the wall, and I was like, that's like one step away from a fat head, man.
Let me just see what the material is. You know what? It's plastic. It's plastic.
I'm just saying that if I'm a Big 12 athletic director and I have a suite, it's going to be baller than... having some pennants. Like, why the hell do you need a TCU pennant on the wall?
Yeah. we have a good number of women in here tonight, by the way, Ketch. I think our sexy is growing.
We had a number of women commenting. Hello, all of the ladies of the Orange Bloods Be Live post-game show. Thank you, Aranda or Aranda, depending on how you say that. Thank you to you and all the ladies for being in here. It's nice to, Oh, it is a dump, dude. Yes. No, Ryan, I thought for a second you were making like a, never mind. Let's see real quick. What have we not talked about? Cause it's after midnight.
Okay.
I gotta be up at 6 a.m. for the Liverpool game. You gotta write your column.
And I have an 8 a.m. flight out of here. So, I mean,
an all-nighter.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll just go back to the, there's no Marriott here. I can tell you there's no Marriott here. So yes, I'll be pulling an all-nighter. I'll be, you know, writing my column. I got most of it done. So I'll be writing my column. By the way, just ladies, you guys are safe. If anyone creeps you out or anything like that, we'll handle it. So you guys are in a safe zone. You know, Ketch, I think we covered mostly everything. You know, I think we covered offense. I think we covered defense. You know, we've talked about Chris Boyd. We've talked about the injuries.
I got one for you. One more question.
Cameron Dicker.
That may be the answer to this question. Who's your unsung hero of the night?
Dicker did kick one into the wind, which was very impressive, I would say.
Is it Gerard?
Gerard's a good one.
I mean, because he just, I think he finished 6 for 54. Like, he got interviewed on the Longhorn Network after the game, and they talked to him like they hadn't spoken to him all season long.
I mean, anytime you ever see him, it's like one pass that gets just overthrown. You just never see him again.
Do you know what one of the questions was they asked him? They're like, hey, Gerard, like, so what do you think about this team?
They had nothing. They had nothing. That is, from a reporter's perspective, when a reporter goes that open-ended and is like, give us your thoughts on, that means they didn't really, really think out a good question. And so, yeah, poor Gerard. Speaking of
good kids, I like Gerard, and I'm glad he had tonight. I'm glad that no matter what else happens, Texas fans will know what I'm talking about when I say this. It may be slightly outdated because it happened a long time ago, Anwar. So if you don't get this one, don't worry about it. But this was like his Chance Mock moment. Chance Mock in his senior year back in 2004 against Texas Tech had his one senior year moment, but it was a big one. And I think Gerard had that tonight.
Why don't we answer one question and then why don't we call it a day? I'm going to put, since Aranda joined us late, why don't you want to tackle that one?
I think it's pretty clear.
You've got to do for your podcast. Will Bouchel transfer after the year is done?
I think the answer pretty clearly is yes. I think even if Bouchel didn't want to transfer or wasn't instinctively thinking about it, I think the kid wants to play. I think it's more apparent now, certainly, than it was a year ago, that it's Ellinger's job. And Aranda, apologize. It's got to be one of those two. I think the way they've positioned this, you know, like, to Herman's credit, he's been pretty open about, like, hey, we don't want to rob him should this be something that he wants to do. The crazy thing is, Anwar, there was a part of me that wondered at the end of, like, when it was 34-17, I was thinking to myself, they're not going to put Shane in the game. So is this a game where in the final 3 minutes, if it had gotten to 41, because it was 34-17 with 10 minutes left, if it goes 41-17 and there's 3 minutes to go in the game, feels like one of those moments where you don't want your quarterback to be needlessly injured in a 24. You know what I mean? Like, I wondered, is tonight the night where they throw a freshman on there to preserve the Bouchel thing? Obviously, the game went in a direction at that 34-17 moment that made that a moot point and a completely wasted thought. But yeah, I think Shane Bouchel transfers. I think they've prepared themselves for that. I think in a way it's not a bad thing because the program will be better off next year with a young quarterback developing and taking those snaps in the two role. Like, what the hell good would Cameron Rising or Casey Thompson, right? Like, whichever one of those two guys leaps ahead, and I think most people think right now that Cameron Rising would be that guy, right? I mean,
it was in the war room. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
You guys are asking a lot of questions, and I can tell who's reading our war room and who's not. Like, there's some questions that are being asked, and like, well, what's the thoughts on Cameron Rising? I'm like, you didn't read our war room.
So I think that you go into next season, and Shane Bouchel's just average. So Cameron Rising, just every day in practice, taking the reps with the twos is a big deal because all of this season, he and Casey Thompson have been taking scout team work. And, you know, like, if you think that those two guys are the long-term future in a few years Sam, we might at some point have to start talking about the idea of Sam Ellinger not being a four-year player. I mean, he's not there yet. I'm just saying that if he goes into next season as the perceived best quarterback in the Big 12 and he consistently starts putting in games the way we've seen him do for the last couple of weeks, I think it's something that we will be talking about in a year from now, where I don't think we ever would have thought that. I heard Todd McShay today say, hype doesn't matter anymore. And Russell Wilson is a perfect example of why Kyler Murray could be an NFL quarterback prospect if he wanted to be an NFL quarterback prospect.
Come on. No, come on in, Ant. Come on in, Ant. Ant yes. just popped in.
Hey, Ant. Jeff. What's up?
Why don't you take the headphones, Ant?
And if they don't know, back in the day, you and I used to rock it on Lake Travis.
In our younger days. We miss you at CBS Austin, Jeff, but we're really proud of you. Thank you for all you do for
I am Texas an alum.
And recruiting and everything.
Have I you made it under the KI-42 Ring of Honor yet?
You're in the Hall of Fame.
You
put you in the Hall of Fame 19 years ago.
I didn't get invited to the ceremony, but thank you. Yes.
You're the man, Jeff. I love you to death. I love you and your kids and your family and everything. And, you know, Anwar's the man. We love Anwar.
So for everyone who always wants to know who asked those questions in the press conferences, it's this guy.
Anthony is the best question asker in the entire Austin media market because.
You sit down.
I appreciate that.
There's a methodology to how you ask random questions that Anthony's able to pull off. You know who you are, Anthony? You are the future Ed Clements of this market.
Ed? I love Ed.
Like in 30 years, though.
That's some high praise because Ed is a legend.
In 30 years, you're going to be Ed Clements. You're going to get the first question at every single press conference.
If I could be half of what you are, half of what Ed Clements is, I'm going to die a happy man. And half of what Anwar is, too. First class stand-up, class act guy pro.
Get that money out. Get that wallet out.
He'll be here all day. Tips are great. Jonathan.
Okay, I got to get back to work. Jeff needs me. So
go back to work. Yes.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for all you guys do. Anwar, you guys, everyone at Orange Bloods does a terrific, awesome job.
I'm going to get you on a podcast coming up soon.
Anytime. You got my number.
I do.
I got to edit something. I got to go do your old job.
It's 12:30 in the morning. You have work to do.
Anthony had that first question tonight about Kingsbury left too much time on the clock.
No, that was Brian Davis.
Yes. That was Brian Davis.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Take care, Jeff. Good seeing you.
Yes. By the way, that actually was a very humorous question from Brian Davis, by the way.
A little bit of levity.
On that note, dude, we've been doing this for an hour plus.
Let's go ahead.
Liverpool starts in 5.5 hours. Your flight leaves. Catch, why do you always give Chip Brown shit after the press conference? I literally don't know what that's about.
I don't know either. I don't think you've addressed Chip or have made mention of Chip in the longest time.
I don't know what that's about. Like,
I don't know.
It's 12:30. Yes.
Yes. Yes. You know what? There's a lot of people drinking. There's a lot of people who are doing more than drinking, smoking. There's people who are delirious. So we'll go let those people go.
I think I've forgotten that most of the people in this, you know, live chat while we've been talking, they're all shit faced, man. It's Saturday. You and I are like the only two people that, and Anthony are like the only three people that haven't been drinking. So yeah, you know what? Probably I totally get it. Like, hey, why are you always talking that shit about Chip? Like that question, he's been one to ask. Oh, that was Brian Davis. Yes, Contreras. Yes. That was Brian.
Brian tweeted about Chris Del Conte, then had to take away his tweet. So
weird.
It's been a long night. It's been a long night.
Weird things happen when Texas plays Texas Tech. even I had a brain dead moment today. So it happens. Texas moved to 7-3. That's the bottom line. Anwar, go get some rest. Go take care of yourself. Manny Diaz will not be making a comeback as the DC at Texas. Sorry, Aranda. Anwar and I are done for the night, guys. Be safe. Don't drink and drive. And which, real quick, which reporter does Herman hate the most? I don't know. I think I know, but I'm not going to say it on a podcast. In the very last comment, right out the door.
I think I know too, but I'm not, you know,
Eric.
It will be posted on their website, and I don't feel like dealing with that or arguing with that person.
Eric, you, if Anwar and I had been drinking, then you probably get that answer. But
yes,
because we're stone cold sober, even it, yeah, exactly. This is water. I promise. This is water.
Okay, let's get out of here because people are starting to guess.
All right. We're not gonna confirm it. Everybody, be safe. Seriously. Happy Sunday to everybody. Safe travels. Anwar, we'll do this again on Monday when Anwar and I both do our podcast for the Yak. Subscribe. We'll have everything over at orangebloods.com in the next 24, 36 hours. Everybody be good to each other. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.